by identification, what's your sort of standard procedure?
Usually I write people and say, okay, send them on.
Uh-huh.
And the typical format is that they'll send duplicate specimens and
mm-hmm.
labels so that if I want them,
okay.
I don't always want them,
yeah.
I can keep them
right
here, and it helps the herbarium, and so
mm-hmm.
is some small repayment
right.
for the service. The process that I go through, well, actually, I even do have sort of a concrete example.
Okay.
A little larger than most. This last October, one of the people working for the Ontario Natural Heritage
mm-hmm.
Program, in fact, their botanist, left me a batch of things to have me check the names, and it happened to be 634, which is larger than most. What I do then is I make a first pass through the specimens, anything that I can name at a glance,
uh-huh.
I just tick off,
yeah.
and that's fine. But then, of course, there is the residue of things that
right.
take a lot more work. And that work is basically in two parts. One is many of those specimens, what I basically need to do is just look under the microscope to double check
mm-hmm.
for characters that I just can't see well
mm-hmm.
enough
mm-hmm.
by eye, even when I take my glasses off.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other step, if even that doesn't prove to be sufficient, and that could be for any number of reasons,
mm-hmm.
the most common one being that the specimen happens not to contain the most simple
mm-hmm.
characters that
right.
you need for identifying it. In other words, it may be in flower
mm-hmm.
when the easiest way to name them is in fruit,
yeah.
or vice versa, or it may just simply be missing
mm-hmm.
some character. People snatch the top of a plant when all the distinctive features are in the way it interacts with the soil.
Okay.
So then, or it may also be that it's extremely complicated taxonomically, and there is not an adequate revision or
mm-hmm.
review of the plants that is usable for identification, and that's not all that uncommon.
Right.
Many people who are excellent taxonomists and produce really quite logical and reasonable classifications can't distill
mm-hmm.
what they know into a format that communicates easily to other people the characters that
right.
they're actually using in their minds to form their
right.
groupings, no matter how sensible and logical
mm-hmm.
and supportable their groupings are. Some monographs just are darn near unusable.
Uh-huh.
When that happens, I usually do one of several things. The main thing is to go back in the herbarium
mm-hmm.
and start looking at specimens of the group, and that often gives me a fairly clear picture of what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Then after I learn them that way, I can often go back and say, yeah, well, that's so-and-so,
okay.
And it all works. And, of course, that's part of the reason why we get a lot of material to identify here
mm-hmm.
is because there aren't very many herbaria where you can go back, you know, pull out 50 specimens, lay them out,
right.
and get a real
yeah.
grasp of the
uh-huh.
situation, and where you can expect that those specimens are going to be high quality and properly identified and all
right.
that. So that is sufficiently unusual that it's somewhat distinctive. So but sometimes even that isn't
mm-hmm.
enough. It hasn't been worked on, it's not worked out, and then you just resort to basically gathering enough data yourself as quickly and as sketchily as possible, admittedly, if it's not something you're planning for a research project, to get some quantitative methods for identifying things. And that's, I think, what you saw me doing
With the sedges.
I had a graphic, and I was using it to plot the position of a plant.
Right.
This can vary from being a simple one-dimensional
scale or something.
Scale to a very complex mathematical sort of thing. The map end of it is typically when you're looking at a very complex situation and you really do genuinely intend to publish it,
mm-hmm.
because it's extremely time intensive.
Okay.
For example, one can do a discriminant function analysis,
mm-hmm.
which is essentially a mathematical device that takes the measurements of two a priori groups that
mm-hmm.
you think are distinct species, even if they're very difficult
right.
and complex and close together, and develops a linear equation
mm-hmm.
that maximizes the discriminating ability of each of the measurements. It weights them and that. So when you add it all together, it pulls the two groups that
yes.
you've a priori defined as far apart as possible. And by a simple extension, you can do this in a two-dimensional framework as well. And then you can use the function, the equation that you've derived from those a priori groups, and calculate for some other mystery specimen
mm-hmm.
the position in that defined
right.
coordinate space.
That's what I saw
and,
on the screen the other day?
Perhaps.
With that Oldham, whatever it was?
Oh, no, that was more a simple two-dimensional scatter diagram.
Uh-huh.
But the...
Perhaps we ought to focus
sure.
a bit on one of those two-dimensional scatter diagrams.
But the principle is essentially
yeah.
the same. I think that was the one, yes.
Yes.
Because in actually the last batch of specimen I got from this fellow, this is the same fellow here as this
yeah.
big list, he sent me a specimen of this Fraxinus, one of the ashes, that he felt was Fraxinus profunda.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, it was ambiguous, and,
yeah.
and I just simply couldn't tell. And so I had actually previously gone through specimens and mapped out the Fraxinus just to see how they separated, because I had already gotten from someone else in Pennsylvania
uh-huh.
another specimen which
okay.
was less ambiguous. And and
what's
so,
Samara?
Samara?
Yeah.
It's a winged fruit.
Oh, okay.
A winged single-seeded fruit.
Oh, okay. And so the two scales you're looking at here are the width?
The width and the length.
And the length.
Yeah. And they are in general correlated somewhat. Not completely. You can see that the one species has much larger samaras, the second one has
yes.
smaller ones.
And you've got those dots there.
Yeah.
It looks as though you've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Right.
And so you had 5 specimens that...
No, I made 5 measurements on
uh-huh.
the specimen.
Oh, okay.
The reason for that is just to give me an idea of the
right.
scatter and which direction it scatters in.
And you decided that it was the red one.
I'm sure that that's what that is.
But
it's
right on the edge.
It's right on the edge, yeah. And you can see that when you look at a diagram
right.
like this.
Yeah.
The primary reason why I decided that is basically you can...
Don't write on
you,
that
you,
don't, I'm gonna, well,
oh,
I'll
okay.
have another copy. No, you
sure.
write on it.
You
write on
you,
it.
You can, sort of do a fairly nice
okay.
tracery
right.
without making the lines too gross. into two groups.
Yeah.
And obviously, it looks like they meet,
mm-hmm.
but they don't actually interfinger too much. The more you measure, the more likely you're going to be to get a few that transgress.
Right. Right.
There are other characters, for example, the length of the sepals in the flower that work, but most people collect these things in the fruits, and then the floral parts are eroded away and somewhat, and so you can't be sure of getting measurements. You also have to be careful to try and do this in a fairly standard way. And the reason for that is that any particular plant part can, for reasons of accident or poor development or whatever, be smaller than usual.
Right.
So that you, in order to get the proper expression of the features, you try to measure the largest ones in every case for both.
So if you get a specimen, I mean, whatever, a twig or whatever it is, off the ash, and it looks overall stunted to you.
Yes.
It doesn't seem the size of most of the wood part is not as developed as the rest of your specimen, then you say that this patch doesn't apply, or you...
You would certainly take that into account. And sometimes you can use those features to be more precise in very difficult and complex groups. And I can show you another example that I was actually just involved in. I was just involved in it yesterday. It's a very difficult group of sedges, even nastier than usual. It's a case where the most easily used and easily measured characters show a great deal of overlap. And nevertheless, I believe that the plants are indeed distinct. The reason I believe they're distinct is because the patterns of variation that the two show are quite different for the same characters. In other words, this red one is basically tracing out a circle.
Right.
There's no variation of
Never
correlated with this, whereas this is a long oval, and that pattern alone being different is somewhat unusual. But the problem is, you can see that there's a considerable overlap zone here. And if you trace, you know, do a generous tracing around here to include all these things, and then you do a tracing around here to include all these things, there's a big overlap zone. And this gets a little difficult. Again, there are some other characters, but they're not very easy to measure. And you can actually even apply the ideas of how robust a plant is in this instance. For example, the specimens of this species that are over here are the very smallest and most narrow-leaved.
Right.
They're probably, you know, they probably had a hard life.
Mm-hmm.
And a kinder, gentler existence, they would have been big.
Right.
And so that even though these two species have approximately the same size of fruits, this one here, on this side of the diagram, would be large individuals of this species.
Okay.
On this side of the diagram here, there are very, very small individuals of this species. So within this overlap zone, you can actually apply characters that might not work in other instances. So, for example, the paraginium length and the shape does not really differ all that much among these two species, but confining yourself then strictly to the zone of overlap does produce a difference, because the ones of this species are the very smallest individuals, the ones of that one are somewhat larger than normal individuals, And when you actually trace it out, you do get two sort of different groups separating out. And if you were to include measurements from everything here, these groups would mesh.
Right.
And this is basically an illustration of an identification problem that's not all that uncommon, and that is species produced by evolution out in the wild don't necessarily have any single character that separates them. Very often any particular character
right.
can overlap, but not simultaneously.
Mm-hmm.
And so in this particular case, I was a little worried about this specimen, because you can see it was, well, it looked like it was surely in
this
group.
This Rolf Meyer fiber.
Right. And it was a little ambiguous.
Yeah.
And again, I had this, and then when I looked at it here, there was these ones, and this seemed clearly to be up in here. And of course, admittedly, where you draw the lines here is somewhat arbitrary, except that in general variation shown by plants tends to follow reasonable patterns, so it wouldn't be a plausible
line. So you decided it was Carex tenera?
Yes.
Right. Yeah.
Even though the specimen was pretty much ambiguous.
And it was sent to you because it was ambiguous?
Yes.
Or was part of a larger collection?
It was part of a larger collection of a variety of similar kinds of problem things. This fellow is working on a Cyperaceae.
Is this fellow, or is this somebody else's collection he's working on?
This fellow. Mm-hmm. He's working on a treatment of the Sedge family for the state of Nebraska.
Okay.
Very boring state. but he just couldn't work out what some of these things were with the material he had available.
Right.
And so here we had enough material, enough types, so I knew what I was talking about, and enough sampling that I was actually able to provide a fairly positive answer for him.
Right. Okay, so, and how long did it take you then to work out 5025?
Probably a half an hour.
Uh-huh.
And that's only because I had the data already in hand, and as you can imagine.
And are you the only person in the world who's got this kind of stuff on his computer or her computer? For Carex?
For many species, probably. Yeah, this project on this particular group of Carex, there is actually someone that's at a university in Indiana that I'm cooperating with, and I'm doing some of it, and he's doing some of the others. But as far as I know, for many of these, I'm the only person that has a lot of this data compiled and in a usable form like
this. Right. Is that available? I mean, can people get at it through the web? I mean, or
no, I haven't done that yet. As a long-range goal, I do intend to work up this group and put it out in a form that's takes advantage of modern technology.
Right.
The problem with this group is when you have plants that are really obviously distinctive evolutionary units, but they're very difficult to identify because of character overlap, simple dichotomous keys tend to break down.
Yeah.
Because they're not really meant to work on a, you know,
probabilistic kind of
best 3 out of 5feature. So there are other kinds of identification devices, multiple entry algorithms that handle this kind of thing much better, but they are not easy to adapt to a printed medium.
Right.
So they're much more easy to adapt to the kinds of things that computers can do so readily, search algorithms.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So for example, you can, you know, draw up a character list, and only one species may have all those characters combinable in that way.
Yeah.
And yet each individual character taken by itself mm-hmm. would have overlap and cause problems, but the combination is totally unique. So that's very hard to deal with in a dichotomous key. It's not difficult to deal with taxonomically because the human brain is very skilled at recognizing these kinds of patterns, and of course, given the proper programming, so are computers.
Sounds like all the problems involved in reconstructing proto-Indo-European sort of historical linguistics has all these bits of characters lying around and unique paths.
Yeah, it's about a similar sort of problem, yeah.
Okay, well, I think we've got a pretty good outline for this.
I'll get you the better copies.
Well, actually, I might actually keep these as well with your notes on, but I wouldn't mind another one as well.